ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15, and we're going to do text number 9 together. So I'll just read the Sanskrit and read the translation for 7 and 8. Na dadyat ami samshradhe, na chadyat dharma tatvavit, munyanai syat para prithir, yata napasuhim saya. Translation. A person fully aware of religious principles should never offer anything like meat, eggs, or fish in the Shraddha ceremony. And even if one is a Kshatriya, he himself should not eat such things. When suitable food prepared with ghee is offered to saintly persons, the function is pleasing to the forefathers and the Supreme Lord, who are never pleased when animals are killed in the name of sacrifice. Text 8. Natadrisa paro dharmo nuinam sad dharmam ichatam yaso dandasya bhuteshu mano vakaya jasyaya. Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities, whether in relationship to the body, words, or mind. There is no religion superior to this. And now text number 9. Eke karma mayan yajyan gyanino jagya vitama atma samyamane niha juvati gyana dipite eke karma mayam yajyan Gyanino jagyavitama atma samyamane niha juvati gyanadipite eke karma mayan yajnam Gyanino jagyavitama Atma samyamane niha juvati gyana dipite. Ekamam mayam yajyam Gyanino jagyavitama Eke
Sum
Karma mayan
resulting in a reaction such as the killing of animals.
Yajnan
sacrifices.
Jnanina
persons advanced in knowledge.
Yajñavittama
who know perfectly well the purpose of sacrifice.
Atmasamyamane
by self-control.
Aniha
who without material desires.
Juvati
execute sacrifice.
Jnanadipite
enlightened in perfect knowledge. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles, and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge, or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies, purport. People are generally very much interested in karmakanda, ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems. But when one awakens his spiritual knowledge, he becomes uninterested in such elevation and engages himself fully in jnana-jugya to find the objective of life. The objective of life is to stop completely the miseries of birth and death and return home back to Godhead. When one cultivates knowledge for this purpose, he is considered to be on a higher platform than one who is engaged in karma jugya or fruitive activities. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Padale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharane Nirvishesha Nirvadi Pastachara. So Krishna says in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam sahasresu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha, that out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. So Prabhupada's saying the same thing here in the purport. He's saying people are generally very much interested in karmakanda, ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems. So he says only out of many thousands of people that one is even interested in this jnana jugya, trying to understand, who they are beyond the body. And then a little further on in that chapter, Krishna says, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam ampapajate vasudeva savarmiti samahatma sudulabha, that after many births and deaths, one who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very, very rare. So it's a process. And, even among the jnanis, it's not like all the jnanis understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One could be, as Krishna says in that verse, after many births and death, one who's actually in knowledge, it can take a while before somebody comes to the conclusion that Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadulabha, then that person becomes a devotee and is considered such a great soul is very, very rare. So, in other words, more important than performing ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to higher planetary systems is this cultivation of knowledge. And the cultivation of knowledge culminates in understanding Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sadulabha, that Krishna is the cause of all causes and all that is. And then one who has come to that conclusion of knowledge, he's not interested in cultivating knowledge any further. That's the goal of all the knowledge, and he's interested in sharing that knowledge with other people. Okay? So you start off with maybe desiring elevation to the heavenly higher planets, and then when you become more enlightened, you understand that you're supposed to cultivate knowledge. But then when you finally come to the conclusion of cultivating knowledge, which is Krishna is the cause of all causes, then you want to share that knowledge with others. And that's what Krishna consciousness, that's what being a Vaishnava is all about, trying to share this conclusion that Vasudeva Savamiti is with everybody else, with all the people who aren't understanding that. And that's the mood of all the great devotees. That's the mood of all the our Srila Prabhupada and all the predecessor acharyas. And that's even what Krishna himself desires, that this knowledge be spread among human society. Human life is the opportunity to get out of this cycle of birth and death, go back home, back to Godhead. And it's essential. You know, people aren't going to be able to do that unless they have this knowledge. So it's very important to distribute this knowledge. One little interesting anecdote kind of relates to this. As I was traveling this last summer with some brahmacharis, we were distributing books at these different music festival concerts. So at one point, one day, there's a little discussion in the van that one of the devotees, Parameshwar Das, was saying to people when he was distributing, he said, these books are written by God. And so one of his partner, Madhukari, the brahmachari, was saying, you can't say that to people, Parameshwar. It's not exactly accurate, you know. You can't really say to people. So, he went back and forth, and they were kind of like, Parameshwar was going, no. Anyway, so they asked me, well, what do you think? You know, what do you think? I said, well, actually, I think he's right. These books are written by God. And so then Madhukari, well, how so? I mean, Vyasadeva's a literary incarnation of God. I mean, it's not exactly. Anyway, so the point I made was that Vyasadeva is a post, right? Because it says in the Bhagavatam that in the next Manvantar, Bali Maharaj will be Indra, so he can rightfully, occupy his kingdom. And Ashvatthama will be Vyasadeva. I'm pretty sure that's right in the Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva is a post. And a devotee named Nandanandana, god brother of ours, he found a reference in the Vishnu Purana, which says that in this Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva is actually an expansion of Narayan. So the current Vyasadeva is actually, an expansion of Narayan. So all these verses and translations, well, not translation, but the verses, the actual verses themselves of the Bhagavatam, are written by Vyasadeva, who is an expansion of Narayan. Then somebody could say, well, what about the purports? Well, the purports get pretty close, too. There's a couple interesting anecdotes there. Is that one, everybody's probably seen the Prabhupada memories, and there's that one where Bhavananda tells about the time he was in the room with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, actually, I didn't want to come to this material world. And, I won't be able to, can't remember it word for word, but the gist of it was Prabhupada said, but Krishna, he was presenting, we had a disagreement. This was a disagreement between me and Krishna. And these Prabhupada just saying, I didn't want to come to this material world. Bhavananda said, he curled his lips in distaste. So, but Krishna was insisting, And then it went back and forth, and then finally Krishna said, don't worry, just go and write those books. So Prabhupada was deputed to come here. I mean, if you take that at face value, Prabhupada was deputed to come here to write these books. And I know sometimes when I read the Bhagavatam, recently I just started using my iPhone, Apple iPhone, to go onto Vedabase.com, which gives you access to pretty much mostly all of Prabhupada's books. The entire Bhagavatam is on there, the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, and a whole lot of other stuff. Almost the whole database, pretty much, and it makes it very easy to kind of, read whenever you have a spare moment. You just kind of like go to that website, the thing seems to work so that even when you click off it, when you click back on, you're right back there where you left off. So it's quite convenient. So I'm reading, and so I started the Bhagavatam again, and I'm reading through it, and I'm just marveling at the purports, and I'm thinking, wow, how did Prabhupada write these? And it's kind of like, they're just like amazing. And I got to the point where I was thinking am I being offensive by thinking like how could Prabhupada possibly have written this? Because it's just, they're just like so like everything, the style, the grand, it's just so spot on and the points he's making. I was just saying, wow, it seems like the command of the English language even is like vastly superior to the command of the English language Prabhupada manifests even when he's speaking. And I was kind of like, feeling uncomfortable with that. Well, wait a second. I was visiting when I was on traveling Sankirtan, and then about 2 weeks ago, this person sent me a link, and it had like an excerpt from another one of those Prabhupada memory videos. And this one was a god brother, Prabhupada disciple, Bhagavat was speaking. And Bhagavat was recalling this incident where he was with Prabhupada in India. And Tamal Krishnamaraj was the other person. Srimad Tamal Krishnamaraj and Prabhupada was preaching to some people, and they both left the room. I don't know if Prabhupada was preaching English or not, he didn't say. But they both left the room, and then Prabhupada called them back. He said, what are we doing? Why are you leaving? Where are you going? He said, well, Prabhupada, we had things to do. You know, and he says, but you know, your thing to do is to listen to me preach, to hear me preach. And if you don't listen to me, how are you going to learn how to preach if you don't listen to me preach? And what could they say? And Prabhupada said, are you reading these books? Yeah. And they said, well, yes, Prabhupada, we're reading them. Do you know the shlokas? You know, you have to be able to, and Prabhupada quoted a shloka, very basic shloka. It was like Tesam Satta Diyuktana. It was a very, you know, one of the basic, most famous shlokas. And Prabhupada asked him, do you know this shloka? You know, can you say verse and chapter where it's from? And, you know, Bhagavat looked at Tamal Krishnamaraj, and Tamal Krishnamaraj looked at Bhagavat, and neither one of them, each one was thinking the other would know, and neither knew it. And Prabhupada said, says, you don't know. He says, so you have to read these books. Otherwise, how will you be able to preach to these men? Because they were leaders, you know. How will you be able to make them Krishna conscious? You have to know this. And then Prabhupada said, went on to say something pretty amazing. He said, actually, even I read my books. I study my books. And they went, okay. And he said, you know why I study my books? And neither one of them said anything. He said, because when I read these books, I learn something. He said, because I didn't write these books. And then Prabhupada went on to explain. He says, every morning when I sit down to write these books, he said, Krishna comes and sits down next to me and tells me what to write. And I just take dictation. So that's what he said. And, you know, it's been a while. I've heard that story kind of like on and off since, you know, years and years ago. And I'm pretty sure I've heard Tamal Krishnamaraj tell that same story. But let's you know, accepting that as factual, wow, you know, that's pretty far out. These, you know, Prabhupada was it's a supernatural process. Not that, you know, Prabhupada was dictated to by Krishna, and he's just writing what Krishna's telling him to write. That's, you know, that's what these books are. So it's, you know, if somebody were to say to somebody, these books are written by God, it's pretty accurate. And it's pretty accurate to say that, because Prabhupada was an instrument, you know. And maybe not at every session was it like, you know, that level of supernatural process involved, but maybe, I don't know. I only know what he said and what he's saying Prabhupada said. So, you know, these books are the most valuable thing that we can give to anybody. It's the most valuable thing that they could get in their whole entire lifetime. And, you know, trying to give people Prabhupada's books is the, is mentioned here in this, it's like the superior religion. As we're talking about in the verse before that, persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities. So this is, you know, an application of that. Like in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it says, Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nimatsaranam satam. They're completely rejecting all religious processes which are materially motivated. This Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. So, this is the what to speak of envying other living entities. You know, we don't want to envy other living entities. We have malice towards other living entities. We want to, you know, give them the best thing. You know, give them the mercy, and you know, this is the best way to do it. And if it's a little bit difficult, you know, if there's some difficulty involved, well, okay, that's so what. Actually, there's a verse in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. I can't remember the Sanskrit or even the exact English, but the gist of it is that great personalities almost always voluntarily accept suffering, you know, for the purpose of trying to give Krishna consciousness to the mass of people like that. Vijay is very fond of quoting that when he gives class. So that's the idea. And Prabhupada says in the purport that that's the highest form of worship, you know, voluntarily accepting tapasya, you know, voluntarily accepting bodily, mental inconvenience for the purpose of trying to share Krishna consciousness. That's the highest form of worship. And Prabhupada also says in that purport that by doing that, one is very quickly recognized by Krishna. So that's an important statement. You know, I mean, as devotees, our ears should perk up when we hear, you know, something like that, because that's our goal. That's what we want. We want to be recognized by Krishna. And if somebody's going to telling us how to be not just recognized, not just quickly recognized, but very quickly recognized by Krishna, we should be very interested in what is that method? You know, what is that method how I can be very quickly recognized by Krishna? Just like if you're a businessman and somebody, you know, who was a very successful businessman told you, hey, let me tell you a way that you can get rich. No, let me tell you a way that you can quickly get rich. Let me tell you a way that you can very, very quickly and very easily get, you'd be interested. You see, because, you know, that's your thing. You want to make money. So in the same way, here's a very, the most advanced devotee that we're all aware of. And he's saying this is the way to be very quickly recognized by Krishna. What? Just what was stated, just voluntarily accepting some, performing some tapasya to share Krishna consciousness with the people who don't have it. See? And, you know, and that's is the highest form of worship. And we should be very interested to do that. You know, it's in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is that verse, machchita madgita prana buddhayantas parashparam katayantas shaman vicham tushanti charamanticha, that the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening mother and conversing about me. You know, so it's really nice. It's encouraged in the Bhagavad Gita that devotees kind of like, you know, meet, assemble together and talk about Krishna and share their realizations and like that. That's wonderful. You know, and Krishna says right at the end of the Bhagavad Gita that one who preaches this message to the devotees is most dear to me. There'll never be anybody more dear and like that. You know, so it's you know, it's really nice that we're having the classes, and this is, you know, Prabhupada gave us this program, you know, to have Bhagavatam class in the morning and then Bhagavad Gita class in the evening. And so it's like it's completely bona fide and wonderful. But, you know, it's also very important to go out and try to contact people who are total strangers and don't know nothing, you know, don't know a thing about Krishna consciousness and try to share it with them. That's also important. You know, that's actually very important. And, you know, sometimes, this is a little bit extreme, but I'll just say it just to kind of put it out there. Sometimes I feel like I remember there's one incident where Prabhupada was walking with Bhaktisiddhanta, his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And he was saying, he was kind of expressing some disappointment at what was happening with that temple they had in Bagh Bazar. Somebody gave a big donation and they built this big, beautiful temple with a lot of marble in, you know, that certain section of Calcutta, Bagh Bazar. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was saying to Prabhupada, actually, if I could, I'd like to sell the marble from this temple and print books. What was happening was that the disciples, his followers, they weren't using it. They weren't like, you know, getting enthusiasm from this wonderful facility to preach. They were just kind of quarreling among each other, just who would occupy what room. And, you know, and Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was disappointed by that, and he felt discouraged, and he was saying, man, if I could, I'd sell the marble from this temple and print books. Okay? And in the same way, Prabhupada in Vrindavan, when they finished the Gurukul, you know, I heard this is on a tape conversation or whatever. Prabhupada was saying, I can't remember the exact words, but I remember one. He said the gist of it was, you know, that some of these managers, that, you know, the leaders there, they were also the same sort of thing. They were trying to like competing who would get more facility. And Prabhupada said, just like these big men, they want to have one leg in one room and one leg. That was the expression he used. So he wasn't happy. You know, he said, bring students. That's what the purpose of this place is. Bring students. You see, so right. So in the same way, you know, the preaching is really what it's all about. You know, the building, the big, beautiful temple in Bagh Bazar was there to facilitate the preaching. The Gurukul, as part of the Krishna Balaram complex, is there to facilitate the preaching. You see? These things are to facilitate the preaching, not the other way around. You know, not that we preach to get facility and then, you know, get comfortable. No. That both Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Prabhupada were displeased by that. See? So sometimes I think it's really important that we have to try to keep this, you know, kind of like priority, you know, keep it like right in front of us and keep the priorities correct, because, you know, it's easy to get away from that. Just like, for instance, sometimes I feel like stop these programs. You know, sometimes, like, you know, there's so many, there's a program at this person's home and a program at this person's home, and there's this program and that program, and even when people come, you know, there's like a big jug. And I just think, it's a little bit radical, I just say, okay, stop, you know. You should have like a GBC resolution that any time outside the morning program and the evening program and the authorized festivals like Janmashtami and Vyas Puja and Gaur Purnima and like that, they should have a rule that you got to have like a minimum 1 hour Hari Nam with book distribution on it. No, it's because, like, you know, devotees don't get together. I mean, everybody has limited time. It's not like all the devotees are, you know, fully living in the ashrams and have full time available to preach. So with what time we do have, that's our really should be our most important activity. Harinam, book distribution, and prashanam distribution. And your programs are okay. Programs are okay. But programs shouldn't eclipse the preaching mission. That's the point I'm trying to make. You know, just like with that Bagh Bazar temple, nothing wrong with the temple. Having a big, beautiful temple, it's okay. But not if the preaching suffers. If the preaching suffers, get rid of the temple. Sell the marble, as Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj. He said that. He meant it, I'm sure, you know. He saw it. The preaching was suffering. It was having an opposite effect. These, you know, disciples weren't getting extra enthused to go out and preach, but rather they were just kind of like competing, quarreling among each other who would get the nice room. So he was saying, sell the marble. Sell the thing, you know. Sell the marble, print books, you know. That's so we have to really keep our priorities correct. That the really important thing is to get out there and preach, and if it's a little bit, you know, inconvenient, if, you know, because if we feel an anxiety, so what, you know, that's part of life. I mean, really, you have to just tolerate that. Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Another point is that if you don't say we're not prepared, we just don't, you know, for some reason or other, we feel a little uncomfortable about going out and preaching because we're very self-conscious or with some health consideration or this or that, and we're just thinking, well, I won't do that and I'll do something else. But the philosophy tells us, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's all throughout the pages of the Bhagavatam, that same difficulty that you're trying to avoid, that you can voluntarily accept for the purpose of preaching Krishna consciousness, making advancement in Krishna consciousness, that very same difficulty that you're hoping to avoid by not engaging in activity, you'll experience anyway. You'll experience anyway. Krishna explains to Arjuna in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if you don't fight now according to my direction, you're going to fight anyway, according to your nature. You know, according to the impulses born of the three modes of material nature, you're going to fight anyway because you're a Kshatriya. You're going to fight, but it's not going to be glorious. You see, but if you fight now, as I'm directing you, you're engaging in devotional service. You're getting to use your nature in my service. So that's good. You know, you're getting purified. You're making progress towards going back to Godhead. But if you don't, you're going to fight anyway. So it's the same thing. Each one of us has some sort of, you know, psychophysiological makeup, some talents and abilities, some things we feel like attracted to do, confident to do, we do well. We should do it for Krishna. You know, we should do it for helping to push on the Sankirtan movement. And even if there's going to be some difficulty involved in whatever, there's so many ways that, you know, the difficulty could be experienced. So what? Just do it. Because with the understanding that if we don't, you're going to do that same type of thing anyway, but you're not going to get any benefit from it. It's like you're just doing it for, you know, to improve your material situation. Well, that doesn't work anyway, because according to the Bhagavatam, Tasheva, Heto, Prateta, Kovara, you can't improve it. It's all predestined. That the happiness and distress we're going to experience is already predetermined. So you're not going to be able to change that anyway. So it's like naught. You're doing it for naught. You're not going to get any. It's not going to really be able to improve your material situation, and you're going to missing out on this great opportunity to progress in spiritual life. So. Yeah, we should meditate. Actually, many devotees in this room have already done what I'm about to say now, and you know, they're the way they conduct their lives is evidence of that. But each one of us, as a devotee, we should think. You know, sit down, think. Okay, what are my talents? What are my abilities? What's the best contribution I could make to spreading, you know, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement? And, you know, think, and then which we let, when you come up with something, then go to the temple, go to your authority and say, hey, I think I could do this. You know, take some, be a little bit ambitious. Actually, in one class, I think it was Prabhupada said, everybody should be ambitious how to be a great devotee of the Lord. You know, ambition is not bad if it's used in Christian service. And, yeah, you know, be thinking like that, how to offer our, not just our food to Krishna, but we want to offer our entire life to Krishna. You know, in that section of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, if one offers me with love and devotion, leaf, fruit, flower, water, I accept. That's not the prasadam section of the Bhagavad Gita. He's not really talking about, you know, food and prasadam there. The real thing he's talking about offering, it's actually a section of the Bhagavad Gita where he's trying to discourage Arjuna from worshipping the demigods, and he's trying to, you know, get him to understand that the real thing is just surrender everything to me, offer everything to me, because the next verse he says, Yat Karoshi, Yat Asnashi, Yat Chahosi, Tapasha, yeah? Tat Karushmat Arpana, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away in charity, do it as an offering to me. And he goes on to explain that Subhas, Subhas, Palayava, Moksha Se, Karma Bandana, Sannyasa, Yoga, Yuktatma, Vimukto, Mama Paishisi, that if you do that by this principle of renunciation, there's no reaction, there's not going to be any material reaction, and you come to me. You see? So the idea is we should be trying to meditate, think how I can offer my entire life to Krishna. You know, I want to offer everything. I want to offer all my energy to Krishna. I want to offer all my intelligence, everything. And the result will be what Krishna just described there, that not only you get no material reaction, but you go back to Godhead. So that should be, you know, how we're trying to, like, you know, orient our lives like that. And actually, those people who live in the ashram have an excellent opportunity to do that because, you know, you're more, you don't have to go out and work at a job and spend a lot of time and energy at something that really, it's better if you don't have to spend time and energy doing. You know, it's kind of like it's a very fortunate position, situation to be fully available, to be, you know, to be available fully to be engaged in Krishna service. And now, you know, December coming up, Prabhupada Marathon, it's a great opportunity to try to really, you know, take advantage of that, your good fortune of being fully available for Krishna service and engage in trying to go out and spread the Sankirtan movement by distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And what time is it? 8:14? Okay, I'll make one last point. And even if you don't know how, that's okay. You don't have to know how. There's really no technique required. There's one famous exchange that happened in Atlanta in 1975. Prabhupada met with all the airport book distributors. Sarah was probably there at that time. I don't know. But anyway, so the spokesman was Tripurari. And so he said, Prabhupada, sometimes we go to the temples and they ask us to give a class on a book distribution technique. And Prabhupada said, so what do you tell them? And Tripurari said, well, we tell them first they have to read the books and chant, you know, follow the regulative principles. And Prabhupada cut him off. Prabhupada interrupted him and said, yes, that is our only technique, to become very devout followers of all the rules and regulations. You see? So at least on that occasion, you know, Prabhupada was indicating that you don't have to know sales. You know, there's no sales psychology required or sales technique. Just be a solid devotee. Solid devotee means, and Suvas read something like this just the other morning when he was reading from the Namamrita. Solid devotee means chanting 16 rounds, following the four regular principles, but, you know, coming to the programs. You do just all the things we're doing here every day. You just do that and then go out with confidence that Krishna's going to reciprocate with you. And he will. You know, he will. It's very simple. I'm going to stop there because I don't want to go way over time. But does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah. Do we have a microphone or no? One person over here, but I don't know if you have a microphone. While we're waiting for the microphone, I'll just say it's so simple. I just walk up to people and say, hi, you from around here? And they say, whatever they say, I say, okay, check it out. In the book. And you look like a deep thinker. You know, just say the simplest thing and then just ask the, you know, person for a donation. You're good.
Thank you, Prabhu. One of the challenges I face is removing all my material desires. So I came up with a little plan when I'm chanting to beg for Krishna's mercy to help me remove all my material desires. Is that something that would be conducive?
It's a good idea to desire to become free from all material desires. That's good. I don't know if you want to necessarily do that while you're chanting. You know, probably the best thing to, the best thing to do while you're chanting is just try to hear the chanting. That's what you always hear recommended. But that's a good desire. You know, that's a good desire. Anybody else, somebody else want to comment on that? Or we're going to another question? Oh, God. That's such a annoying.
Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu. We're talking about knowledge here, and we know that as trying to convey our message, especially when we go to the universities and college, mm-hmm. we're not the only ones. Like when we go to UCLA, you know, when you start climbing to UCLA, I counted one time, I count about 12 different organizations, and many of them are Christians, most of them, including the Muslims and some Jews. So often the question sometimes is, you know, they get fed up. So they said, why will make your knowledge or more genuine, or what will be the characteristics of the you having the best? What will be the characteristics of your organization or your religion or your process being the best? Because mm-hmm. everybody goes to campus, people. You know, there are Christians who are more, you know, like even sometimes to the point aggressive. I've seen them. So, yes, we're trying to convey the message around there. But what will be the characteristic that you can mention to them, or the genuine process that actually this will be better than any other one that is being offered to you?
Well, as far as Christians go, you know, Prabhupada always used to take it right back down to Jesus Christ said, thou shalt not kill. In other words, and he's made the point that if you claim to be, you know, what is the goal of your religion? Is it to develop love for God? Okay, well, you know, the first thing about loving, if you're going to love God, the first step is you have to be obedient. And if you're killing the animals, that's actually going to come up in the next purport here, that's not obedient, you know, because it says, thou shalt not kill. Prabhupada used to attribute that statement to Jesus Christ. Of course, it's actually the fifth of the Ten Commandments. But, you know, point being that you judge a process by the result. And here these people are claiming to be a religion, but it's like it's certainly not benefiting all these innocent animals. And, you know, it seems to be going against statements in their own scripture. So, you know, on those grounds, I would say that it's an inferior process, an inferior, you know, philosophy. Not that satisfying. Arch, do you want to help me out? Any question?
I was just wondering if you could speak for a moment about how Vyasadeva is an expansion of Narayan.
Yeah, it would be about a moment because I would it's stated in the Vishnu Purana. You know, it's a post. It's just like with Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is a post. You see? It's a jiva. A different jiva is a Lord Brahma in every universe. But it's stated someplace, I don't know where, maybe Padma Purana, that in the event that there's not a qualified jiva to assume the post of Lord Brahma, that Krishna himself will be, you know, assume that post. So that similarly, that's what happened at this particular Kali Yuga in regard to Vyasadeva. I don't know if there was no qualified jiva, but or if Krishna just, Lord Narayan just wanted to do it, but it's stated there in the Vishnu Purana that in this particular Vyasadeva is an expansion of Narayan. It doesn't elaborate upon it, and there was no purport presented, at least that I was, you know, that when I saw that, it was just the reference was just there, and so, yeah. It's just, we should just accept it as that. Yep.
Thank you, Brigapati Prabhu, for a very nice class. I wanted to ask you, in reference to the second Bhagavatam verse this morning, where it says that persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living beings, whether in relation to the body, words, or mind. And then it says there's no religion superior to this. So it's obviously something that's really, really important. I wanted to ask you, is there, and it seems to me that something like envy is very, very, it's very deep-seated, and it's not something one can easily get free from. But I want to ask you, in kind of the mood of your class, is there some kind of an express way that one can become free from this? Is there some kind of a faster way or a fast track by which one could become free from this kind of envy?
Exactly what we're doing. Exactly what we're doing. And I remember I read that thing about to be very quickly recognized by Krishna. That's how you're going to become free from envy. If you very quickly when you're recognized by Krishna, you're not going to be envious or, you know, malicious or whatever anymore. You get purified. See? So this process is the way to become free from envy or malice. It's a contamination of the consciousness, and Krishna consciousness, as bhakti yoga is given to us by his Srila Prabhupada, is exactly the way to become, you know, purified or get free from that disease of malice or envy. So exactly what we're doing is the way to do that. And if you asked about the fast lane is preaching. There's different ways to preach, but certainly distributing Srila Prabhupada's books is a very important one. And it's one that's available to everybody. All devotees can do that. You know, not everybody gets the opportunity to give a Bhagavatam class. Not everybody gets the opportunity to go around, travel around and preach here and there and everywhere like that. But practically everybody can have the opportunity to just grab some books and go out on the street and approach total strangers and preach like that. And according to Prabhupada, that's a way to be very quickly recognized by Krishna. And as you said, it's going in the fast lane. It's the fast track. It's the way to accelerate the process. We already have the process. We're already engaged in the process. And the more you try to preach, the more you're accelerating the whole process. At least that's my understanding. Should I stop there?
Thank you.
Good time out? Okay, stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.